Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 200 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Nicole Powell about her book, The Light, The Dark, A Journey to Wholeness. Nicole is a gifted medium and a licensed, ordained spiritualist minister. She's devoted herself to the practice of mediumship and spiritual teaching since 2012. She does private readings, public speaking, writing, and classroom teaching. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Simon.
So we'll talk about your book. It's called The Light, The Dark, A Journey to Wholeness. But what I wanted to ask you about first of all is, what happened when you had your wisdom teeth out?
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, that was my first experience of almost a little bit of a glimpse. And I was 17 years old and my mom was taking me to get my wisdom teeth out. And I didn't really overthink about what was going to be happening. But when I got there, the panic really set in. And I remember going into this little surgical room and having to lay down on this bed, and this man came and his English wasn't the greatest. So it was hard to really feel like we were on the same page and communicating. And it felt like he just wanted to get me in and out as quick as possible so he could get back to his work schedule. And I just remember my heart beating out of my chest. I had so much anxiety and all of a sudden. And as I was getting, I don't know what I was getting. I was getting an intravenous and I was starting to have things, you know, stuff moving through my veins and I was starting to feel woozy in the room. But I had this moment of panic that I wasn't going to be able to be put to sleep. And I remember even when I closed my eyes that I could still feel like I was wide awake. And I thought, oh, what if I feel all this pain? And what if I experience this, you know? And I just remember looking at him and the room was just starting to feel like it was melting. And then when I closed my eyes, I started to see this white light. And I felt as if I lifted out of my physical body and started traveling down at the speed of light. It was so fast. And I just remember almost seeing like my life flash before me as I was traveling down this tunnel. And I remember thinking, I'm like, do they know this is happening right now? Did they see me leave my physical body? Because I'm not in it. And I just kept going and going and going. And eventually I made it to this light. And when I merged with it, it was almost like I just became one with all that is. And I remember feeling this complete, profound feeling of peace and bliss and ecstasy. And I was just like, I wasn't a body. I was just the light. And I have no idea how long I was there. It felt like eternity because time didn't exist. But all of a sudden, I remember just being rocked and I woke up and I looked at the clock and it had only been 15, 20 minutes, just like he said it would be. And all of a sudden, it was like excruciating pain from having four holes in my mouth and being back in a physical body, that jarring feeling. And it was such a contrast to where I was in, you know, peace and endlessness and just expansion that I just remember feeling such a sadness of having to be back here, but also this curiosity that there has to be more, that there's so much more to this world, and that one day I would return to that light again. And for me, it was a turning point in the sense that I knew that there was more. I knew that I got a glimpse of what was out there and just what I had to look forward to one day, because everything was taken away and I was just placed in that space of peace.
And did this change you as a 17-year-old, that your friends would have noticed a change and you became more, I don't know, more spiritual?
Think so. Like, I remember I was on a lot of pain medication. I don't think it got infected or anything like that, but it really knocked me back. Like, I remember feeling almost like a depressive state when I came back, and I didn't tell anyone. I didn't want to share it with anyone because I didn't want anyone to say that, oh, that didn't happen, or was your imagination, or, oh, you just dreamt that. Like, I just didn't even want anyone to kind of put their imprint on it. And as a teenager, I was very inward and I was very moody and I was very private as well. And so I remember just thinking about it, reflecting on it. And one of my friends who had committed suicide, I remember thinking a lot about, is this what he went through? Was this his experience? Like when he died, did he go to this light? Did he get to feel instant peace? You know what I mean? So it almost took me deeper into myself, but I don't remember feeling like I was any different with my friends, or if I did, maybe I disguised it a little bit. And once that door opened for me, I felt that I looked forward to getting closer to that or knowing more about that in the future. And to this day, I don't really know what happened. I mean, again, like I said in the book, that this was when I was 17. So there was no like just typing it into Google and Yahoo or ChatGPT or getting these full downloads or research on what happened to me. And I didn't really think I understood to do that at that time either.
The book's called The Light, The Dark. And I think part of this book seemed to me to be that you say, if you really want to learn about the light and living with the light, then you have to go inside yourself and examine the dark.
Yeah. You know, dark is our teacher because we like to keep it outside ourselves and go, oh, those people, or they do that. But it's when we face our own darkness, we allow transformation to occur. We start to understand ourselves and that returns us to the light. And when we can face our own darkness, we can become brighter in our light than we've ever been in before.
And you go through a lot of different ideas and things in the book. You've had all these other sorts of experiences. 19 years ago, you went backpacking in Australia.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was 20 years old. I'm just 40 now. So when I wrote this, I was 39. So, yes, you're right. I went to Australia by myself for a year and went backpacking. And it was right after the death of two of my close friends who died 3 months apart, both from health conditions. I talked about that in my first book. And I felt like I had to understand what life was about. Like, why did they go and why did I stay, you know? And it was very important for me to experience life outside of my box. Like, I just felt like I lived in this small, you know, this island on Vancouver Island in Canada, and I needed to know what else was out there.
It's quite a thing for somebody that age to go like backpacking in Australia all by yourself for that length of time.
It is. And, you know, at the time it felt totally appropriate. But when I look back, I go, what was I thinking? Like, I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I grew up with my family. I lived from home. I went literally from living at home with my parents to getting on a plane to with no guidebook because I lost it on the second day or something like that. And I just went with it. And I trusted all the wrong people. And I follow, you know, I just kind of went where the wind blew. I never knew where I was going to stay that night until I booked something. But, you know, even in that year, I never went without food. I never went without a place to stay. And I always found a way, but I had to learn very quickly how to find my way.
Did you have any spiritual experiences while you were there?
Yes. So the first few months was just trying to get my bearings and figure things out. But I ended up in the outback of Australia about 4.5 to 5 months into my trip. And I ended up staying in this small town in the Red Rocks that, you know, I feel like it's kind of equivalent to Sedona in Arizona. It's like a very activated place. And I started working at a hair salon where I was a hairdresser. And the woman that ran the shop was a very spiritual woman. And she kind of watched me and she wanted to teach me how to do this work. And so she would give me gifts like a crystal or a pendulum, or she would ask if she could read my cards. I remember her giving me like an energy healing session. So things that she wanted to introduce me to. And she started giving me a lot of books to read. And that's how I got into, you know, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, Adoring Virtue at the time before she changed, and Eckhart Tolle and Dan Millman. So all those type of authors that were kind of really big at the time for self-help. And I remember just absorbing books. And I lived in my own little space and I would just read a book all night almost. And I would stay up all night imagining what it would be like to be connected to higher beings and angels and guides. And, you know, she really opened a door for me. And once I understood that realm, I couldn't go back. And once she started giving me angel cards, I started using them for everywhere I went when I was backpacking and traveling. So it was a powerful way to ignite me into intuition and how to communicate with something higher and to invite that into my life. And that it was my responsibility to build that relationship. So it was a very powerful activation. And also the healing waters in that small town in Kununurra in Australia were also very cleansing for my physical health. I just felt different. And when I left there and went to Uluru, which was also named Errors Rock at the time, and this was at the end of my trip, right before I left, I noticed that I had changed and that I was a lot more connected to a higher source. And when I touched Uluru, I could hear it singing to me. And you know, when you put your head into a shell, you can hear that like angelic aw sound. That was the sound I felt when I touched Uluru. And I realized that nobody else around me was having that experience. And I remember just falling into it and almost just trying to hug it and tears in my eyes because I felt so connected to something that I'd never felt a connection with before. And by the time I came home from my trip, I felt like such a different person that I couldn't go back into my old life. And it's almost like I just had to keep going and keep evolving with this spiritual path. And so I moved to Whistler, BC, and that was probably the perfect place for me to go into the mountains to continue to develop my spirituality, and then which ended up turning into my career.
I saw something in the book, and I'm not sure I read this right, but did you say you were visited by an angel in the emergency room?
Oh, that was my first book, but I did glance into it into the second book. And so, yeah, a couple years after that, so I was 21 when I got back from Australia. And when I was 22, I had appendicitis, and I was in the emergency room. And I was kind of going in and out of consciousness because I had had appendicitis for a while. It wasn't being treated. And I did have a visitation from an angel. And I remember her asking me if I wanted to stay or go. And I decided to stay. And because of that decision to stay, I was directed on this path to do this type of work. Yeah. And that was a choice. Like if I could go now and go home and this could all be done with, or I could stay here and just go deeper into this work. And at the time, I didn't really know what that meant, but it was clear that they were going to show me.
So in the book, you talk about shadow work. Is that where you start examining yourself and your dark side?
Yeah. So when I was 24, I decided to take a 3-year program in Vancouver at Langara College. It was an integrative energy healing program. And it's where we learned all about ourselves, our energy, and doing energy work. And in that program, we had to learn about shadow work, which was basically ourselves, right? And that was my introduction to it. And it continued to evolve from there, of recognizing that if I wanted to grow up spiritually, I had to understand myself and I had to understand my shadow self. And that when we project onto the world, we're missing an opportunity to understand ourselves more. Yeah. And I talk a lot about when people come to this work, how they fear opening up because of the fear of what are they going to find? And what if it's dark? And what if it's scary? And really, you're meeting yourself in the dark, and that the darkness can become your teacher. And it doesn't have to be so scary and out there, because sometimes people just run away from themselves, or they just try and stick to one aspect and go, this is it, and I can't open up to anything else. But it actually stunts their growth of being able to go deeper.
So is there a thing for some people that they just don't like to think about themselves as having a shadow or a dark side, and they can't face it?
I believe so. I feel it's part of the spirituality and part of spiritual growth, and that it may be a phase when we start opening up, that it's like, oh, no, no, that doesn't exist in me. I can't have that, right? Or I got to keep that door closed of maybe things that happened to me in my childhood or things like that. So it's an opportunity and part of the path of spiritual growth and development.
Because you talk about in the book dark energy. Is it when you're working as a psychic, you must in fact acknowledge it and find out what it's there for?
Yeah, so I talk more about curiosity of just acknowledging that it exists. You know, in the spirit world, we are just light like that. It's just light. But when we are on Earth, we experience duality of light and dark. And yes, we work with the light because that's where we return to. But acknowledging that there is darkness in this world helps us understand ourselves and other people and develop a sense of compassion. And I talk a lot in the book about why we don't want to actually send dark energy to people, what the karmic reactions are when we do these immature acts, right? And I talk a bit about witchcraft and things that when it's used for selfish gain.
And you also say that acknowledging this dark energy is not that you're inviting it in.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's like in shamanism, you would recognize that life is in balance and that there's light and dark, but it's not like getting rid of the dark because you can't take a shovel and start scooping out darkness. You'll just create more darkness, right? We have to be able to learn how to turn to the light and recognize that darkness is there.
I think you talk about darkness in people when you talk about a public demonstration of mediumship and all of a sudden the left side of your cheeks started to burn. Could you tell us what happened there?
Yeah. So in 2018, I gave my first demonstration of mediumship in a city. So outside of kind of my comfort zone or where I've been practicing, maybe spiritualist churches. And I remember it was my hometown, so I was excited to be able to do this in Victoria, BC. And there was quite a few people there, I don't know, anywhere between 80 to 100 people. And I remember getting ready and feeling nothing. Like I was like, how come I'm not feeling connected to spirit? It almost just feels like it doesn't exist. And I remember coming out on stage and we were just listening to a song first before we stood up and started. And that's usually what we do. It just gives us time to get into the energy of in the room and it just gives us a moment to connect. But I remember feeling absolutely nothing. And I remember closing my eyes, going like, what's going on here? I'm not connected. And my cheek just started to burn. And it's kind of like that feeling of shame or humiliation when your face just starts to light up. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, when you get embarrassed and you go red.
Yeah, it's burning. And I remember opening my eyes going like, somebody's sending this to me and it's very uncomfortable because it's not coming from me. And I remember scanning the room and catching eyes with this woman at the very back of the room. And she was drilling energy right into me. And everybody else had their eyes closed and they were crying and they were connecting to spirit. But she was just sitting at the back, just sending. And I caught her and I looked at her right in the eyes. And I remember putting my hand in front of me and just being like, no, like you are not allowed to send me this energy. And I reverted it back and sent it to the earth. And I remember just kind of like erasing her from the room, just intentionally, and just acknowledging that I caught her in the act. And once I closed that down, I remember being, it was like, boom, like all of a sudden it was like, I was so connected or more connected than I'd ever been before. And I ended up having a fantastic demonstration of mediumship. But it was that acknowledgement of that people don't always have your best interest in mind. And sometimes people are intentionally trying to hurt others for their own selfish gain or for their own arrogance or for their own abilities of wanting to see other people suffer, which is very dark, by the way. But I share that example of one thing is that I never thought that anyone would think like that. But two, recognizing that it does happen at times and we have to recognize the signs and signals when something's happening. Because sometimes we have to check in with ourselves and go, is it my own energy? Am I off? Am I having a negative relationship with myself right now? Or is there something external that's going on that I have to catch You know what I mean? And so it was powerful for me from that moment to make sure that I was more grounded, more anchored in my power, so that that wasn't even an option to happen in the future, that someone could sense something like that and it could seep into me.
What was her reason for doing that?
I have no idea. But you know what's funny? I remember years later, like I want to say 7 years later, I remember I was out somewhere at the mall, like in town, and I ran into somebody and they said, oh, you know, do you know so-and-so? And I said, oh, kind of. And that was the person. And they said, oh, I heard that they were leaving town because they were being accused of sending so many people black magic. And they're like, isn't that a horrible rumor? And I went, it's like, so she had a thing. I guess this was her thing that she did. And the only thing I could trace it back to was, would be probably jealousy or seeing what they could get away with or, you know, wanting to play with dark energy and seeing what they could do to other people. I'm not sure. I mean, I'd never asked her, so I don't have a clear answer, but that would be my guess, right? And usually when people want to harm others or shrink them, it's because they're trying to inflate their own ego. But in recognition, any energy you send out comes back to you. And people do notice, and they sometimes there's no words for things of, you know, why people send these things, but people pick up on it and they don't like that person and they don't know why. And somebody who's working with dark energy has a very small energy field, because working with darkness shrinks you and working with lightness expands you. So it's like, if you want to be seen, expand your own light. But if you're trying to harm others, you're only getting smaller. It doesn't actually make you bigger. And that's the kind of mind trick that actually plays. So it's like recognizing that there's no benefit in that.
It almost sounds like karma when you're saying what you send out will come back to you.
Yeah. I think I share another story in my book from high school when a girl was playing with black magic and she was sending it to me intentionally and telling people she was trying to hurt me. And I had to reverse the energy again and send it back to Earth, because you never want to send it to the person back, because that's karma. But if you send it to the Earth, it can regenerate and it can integrate and the Earth can handle it.
So did you grow up in a religious family?
No, not at all. I grew up with a family that stayed away from church, because my dad's family was very religious and he grew up religious, and he felt it was more important for us to grow up with our own knowledge and to develop our own relationship with a higher power. But interestingly, from such a young age, I was very interested in working with energy. And even though I didn't see spirits as a child, I was always wanting to communicate with them. And I was used to using things like prayer or inviting in guides or something like that. And I didn't even know I knew how to do that. But I was always had this curiosity of working with energy and magic, and started reading books on it at a very young age.
Yeah, I was asking about that because you talk about how you encounter Lord Ganesha. And isn't he a Hindu god?
Yeah. Isn't that random? Yeah, he is. So this was probably 5-6 years ago. This was during the beginning of the pandemic. I was in California at a silent retreat, and I was in the silence. And so my phone was put away, and I was not drinking coffee, not eating sugar. I was eating a very clean diet, and I was just in my own space. And I had a visitation from Lord Ganesha. And it wasn't just like, oh, with my eyes closed, I could get an image of him. My eyes were wide open and I could see him standing in front of me. And he told me he was Lord Ganesha. And I was shocked, going, okay, I'm not in India. I'm not Hindu. This doesn't feel culturally appropriate for me. Like, I probably shouldn't be seeing Ganesha. And he just said to me, it's like, no, I'm here because I'm an answer to your prayers, and what you've been asking for, I can help you with. And why do you care about what image I come in? And that was a really turning point for me, because I realized sometimes maybe I wouldn't delve into things because I didn't think they were mine. And, you know, culturally, that makes sense. But in the moment of my deep state of meditation, I really felt the oneness and just that we are all connected. And that it was okay for me to have different gods come to me, even if it was Lord Ganesha. And to this day, I have a huge statue of him in my house. It's on my door. And I just absolutely adore him. And I've painted him a couple different times as well. And I feel very connected to him because of that experience.
I wonder if he came to you because he was the one that was just right for you. Like for somebody else, it might have been Archangel Michael, or somebody else, it would have been Buddha. But for some reason, maybe all the gods, all the lords got together and thought, Ganesha, you're exactly the right one for Nicole.
You're the one. Isn't that true? And I love it because he came to me. I didn't go seeking for him. You know, sometimes we study different lords and guides and you go, oh, I want this one, right? But I loved the openness of how that happened. Yeah, it was a surprise.
And he stayed with you for a few days, didn't he, on that retreat?
Yeah. And I would close my eyes, I'd open them, and he'd still be there. And he, because I stayed in the silence, I just felt like he followed me around and he just kept working on me. And it was because he has four arms and he swings them because he's clearing obstacles. That was the vision I could see him doing. He was just clearing the way, clearing the pathway. And yeah, it was very powerful. His eyes were huge and he would just look right into me. And he had a very strong male voice and everything was objective, like outside of me. It was external. And I feel when you go into silence, things like that can happen because you're so out of your own way and you're not thinking and you're not fueling with junk food or the internet or Facebook or whatever, all the different social medias, like you're just, all that's removed from you. So it's like you really meet yourself.
In the book, you mention a spiritual bypass. So is that kind of linked with that as well?
A spiritual bypass would be more like an inability to feel your own feelings and try and jump to the spiritual lesson without experiencing it. So it's like if someone said something rude to you, instead of just feeling it and being like, ouch, like that hurt. Like, why would someone say that to me? Or just taking a moment to feel it. You just go, oh no, they didn't mean that. Or everything's good. Or I needed to learn that for my highest good. It's almost like skipping steps. That would be considered a spiritual bypass.
And you talk about relationships in the book because you write about twin flames and soulmates and karmic relationships. But could you define what a twin flame is?
Yeah. So this is one that happens quite a bit when people come to for private readings and they describe a relationship type that can be quite explosive. And so a lot of people are always at, oh, I just want to meet my twin flame, my twin flame. I go, really? I think you more want to meet your soulmate because that's more, you know, peaceful or grounded. But a twin flame is somebody that enters your life and it's like they come out of nowhere and it's like they light the ignition. All of a sudden, you feel more alive than you've ever felt. You feel more connected to someone than you've ever felt. It's almost like they ignite something in you where it's like you remember who you are, what your purpose is, and you feel so alive. And these relationships can easily turn shadowy. So it's like because they're a twin flame, the archetype of that is that it's like they're you in another form. So it can get very much explosive because you start to see shadows within each other, which maybe other people can't pick up on. And I talk about this in the book. It's like they're not always the person you want to end up in a relationship with because the relationship can become very explosive and toxic at times. And also they're the one that is there to show you where your growth needs to happen. And they kind of come in and out of your life. Usually once you've met one, you know who they are. And they'll kind of walk in tandem alongside you and you will be aware of each other throughout your life. And sometimes people end up with them later on. Sometimes they're just meant to be more friendships or in and out relationships or business relationships. They can come in many different forms, and they can also happen with two women or two men. It doesn't have to necessarily be a man and woman with twin flame dynamics. But oftentimes people will come for readings and be like, oh, I think I've met my twin flame, and they'll explain it, and they'll also explain how difficult it is. And so it's almost like a relationship type or dynamic or archetype I've gotten used to working with other people to help them navigate what the true meaning of this relationship is. Because a lot of people believe that they're supposed to end up with their twin flame, but in reality, it's more about coming back to yourself and understanding who you are and recognizing your own personal power, and that the twin flame showed up in your life to help you remember who you are and what you're capable of.
Have you ever wondered what happens after we die? In my new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, I share 30 incredible stories of people who were clinically dead, some with no heartbeat, no brain activity, yet returned with knowledge that was later verified. These accounts challenge everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. It's available now as an ebook, paperback, and audiobook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other good bookshops. Again, it's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, and I hope you check it out. Is a twin flame kind of like a soul or a spirit that you've incarnated with before, and perhaps they're always a twin flame, or is it something else?
I definitely believe that with twin flame dynamics, there was like a predestined agreement that you would meet in this lifetime for sure, and that you're probably good friends on the other side. That's my analogy of it. And you've probably played out different roles in different lifetimes.
Yeah, because you said it doesn't always have to be a romantic relationship.
Yeah, and when you meet a twin flame, you immediately be like, I know you. I don't know how I know you, but I know you. You're familiar to me.
And so with soulmates, do they always end up being romantic?
Your soulmate could be your dog. Like, it could be your best friend. It can be like, oftentimes people would long to be able to marry their soulmate or be in a long-term relationship with their soulmate. Because when you meet them, it's like you feel home. It's like, oh, I feel home. And that's the only way someone can describe it, is that they compliment you. It's easy to be with them. You feel relaxed in their presence. Your nervous system calms down, and you feel like you can kind of take off your armor or your masks, and you can just be your true self with your soulmate.
It gets more complicated the more you get into it, doesn't it?
It's just, there's so many different types of relationships and so many different dynamics, and we hear these terms and we go, oh, what's that? And I want that one. So it's like recognizing all the different ones.
I could imagine people listening to this and thinking they know about twin flames and soulmates, and now they've heard you saying, well, they're not always romantic and they might be your pet dog. And people will be thinking, oh man, now I don't know what I'm doing again.
And, we are so expansive that sometimes people think there's only one in the entire universe and that's it, right? But recognizing, the more you connect with who you are and show up in your gifts and your authenticity, the more these relationships you will find. You'll find that you'll have a soulmate relationship, maybe to be in partnership with it. You may have a soulmate relationship that you're in a business or have a good friend or a dog, right? It doesn't have to just be one. And sometimes I feel like when people experience loss, they think, oh, that was it. I'll never have that again. So close the door, I'm done. And for maybe that's true for them, but it doesn't have to be.
And when you pass on and you're on the other side and they're there, it might be that they're one of your team, so to speak. They're not, it's not like they're your soulmate in every life.
Exactly. I mean, that would get boring, wouldn't it? Got to keep it interesting. One life it could be your mother, another life it could be your uncle or your grandfather, or it could be your best friend. The more you do past life regressions, it's almost like the more you do, you recognize these players just change forms and move into different roles, right?
Yeah.
Just see your mom over and over and over and over again. It's important that we see things from different angles and perspectives. That's how we learn and we evolve and develop compassion and understanding. Because if we're in the same role over and over again, that could feel like a merry-go-round and being stuck. But we're always evolving.
And on the other side, when you die, there's a thing I think you said about energy and vibration. And you vibrate to what you vibrate to. And so does that mean that depending on your maybe your mind state or your subconscious, you'll go to a certain place in the afterlife that's just right for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like here, we are who we hang with, right? And if you don't like your circle, change it, right? But I also believe we come to Earth to spiritually grow and evolve, and it allows our afterlife even more enjoyable, right? And so there's different departments and different vibrational pools or whatever you want to call it, different layers in the afterlife that we can go to. And in one instance, we're all one. So we're all connected in the spirit world. But in the other aspect, there is different places within the spirit world that we may gravitate to or more in vibrationally alignment to. And the more you evolve yourself in this world, I believe that when we continue back to the afterlife, we'll naturally gravitate to that or go higher than maybe what we've done before.
So if perhaps you haven't done shadow work and looked into your shadow self and acknowledged it, then that if you haven't done that, that wouldn't be so good?
Well, I believe that we all come here for different journeys, right? So for some people, it may not be their journey to understand their shadow work. They may be at a different aspect of self. But for a lot of people who are on the spiritual path and they're wanting to grow up spiritually, they will have to meet their shadow and they will have to befriend it and they will have to understand it to spiritually evolve.
Talking about karma, you also have a section in your book about retribution. So you link those two together.
Yeah, being a minister, because I'm a spiritualist minister, that was a question that came up all the time. Like, is there retribution? Like, do people get punished on the other side? Like, what's happening with them, you know? And if we look at it in the aspect that we are the embodiment of the divine coming to earth, we are only ever judging ourselves. So there's no man in the sky going, you did that and you're being punished for eternity. It's all within us, right? And I think of the judgment card in tarot, where it's like when we're in life review, it's us critiquing ourselves. There's no outside God critiquing you, you know? And so with retribution, it's recognizing that you carry this within you. And when we can correct our mistakes, it will allow us to vibrate higher, but also to not take other people's inventory and looking at what they've done wrong, because they're on their own journey and they're in their own experience. And we have no idea how that may play out for them in this lifetime, other lifetimes, or in their existence. And it's none of our business.
And then there's the question of what happens to people who've been really nasty in life.
Mm-hmm.
They pass on and they're not judged. There's no, I don't know, I wouldn't say punishment, but they just go off into the afterlife like everyone else.
Yeah. And, you know, punishment is man-made. We created that here on Earth, right? And so in the afterlife, we are all accepted and we are all loved and we are all welcome into the same afterlife. And that can be so hard for our physical minds to understand because we want people to be punished for their sins or what they did that was bad in our eyes, right? But like I said, it's like we have to learn that there's our business, their business, and God's business. And we don't necessarily know how it'll play out, but energy has a way of always transforming. And it's like it cannot be created nor destroyed, but it does have to transmutate, right? And so it's up to them how that gets played out. And it's something, it's like I just have to let it go because, of course, I want to see people get punished. But I, again, recognizing that that's my mind wanting that for them in this experience. But it's, they have a role that they play, right? And that they may be playing a role to wake up a lot of other people too. And if we're all one and we're all connected and we're all in this tapestry, there is a reason, even if it's in their darkness.
I suppose there's two levels to it, isn't there? There's the human viewpoint and the soulful viewpoint.
Exactly. Yes. The human viewpoint is like, give them their punishment. But the soul viewpoint is, oh, thank you for teaching me. Right?
Yeah. And it's that thing where I think you say something like, you just don't know about that person's life and what their childhood might have been like and their experiences. And you don't know what they're working on in this lifetime.
Yeah, you don't. And I use the example of when I worked in addictions at a residential treatment center, and I worked in detox. And I found when people were detoxing, their demons came out, right? And it wasn't so much the things that people did to them. It was what they did to other people. And I started to understand why people use, why they stay numb. It's because they can't face themselves. And the moment they sober up, they start to have to experience the pain of what they caused other people and seek forgiveness if they're willing to do the work, right? And oftentimes when people go, oh, how could they do such horrible things? They're numb. They're addicted. They're using. That's how they can do it. Their conscious self is not in the driver's seat. They are so stoned or so drugged up that they've been able to push that away.
I'm glad you got onto that drugs side. I got a question. This is a great kind of link. You talk about how you have clients from Mexico who brought you, is it Ololuqui?
Ololuqui, yeah.
Okay, what happened there? Because that was quite an experience, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, we talked about reincarnation within that. So it's a flower. It's actually the morning glory flower, but it resided in Mexico. And so the seeds is a plant spirit medicine, and it can give you visions, right? It's just kind of like magic mushrooms or different forms of medicines if they're used intentionally and sacredly with intention. And in the book, I share about an experience many years ago where I was fascinated about reincarnation at the time and how does this work? Like, if there's no such thing as time and space, how does it all exist right now, right? And so when I did a sacred ceremony using Ololuqui, I asked to understand reincarnation. And in my experience, once the ceremony began and I went deeper into the state, what I saw is that everything was playing out now. And it was way bigger than my mind could ever comprehend because I'm connected to this lifetime. And in that state, I was able to see it as almost like multiple different screens playing out. And when I sunk my consciousness into each one of these screens, I was able to see that I was living a lifetime at that time. And I saw how other lifetimes affect me in this lifetime and how sometimes when I wake up sad, it may be because of something that's happening in a different lifetime. And I saw the interconnectedness of just parallel lives and multiple versions of myself playing out in different forms. And it started to allow me to understand connectivity and just that I was here to focus on this lifetime, but also understand that it was connecting me to other aspects in other lives. And at that moment, I was having a lot of difficulty understanding connection of Indigenous culture within where I live, and just how separate and divided it could be. And I hated racism, hated anything to do with where people felt disconnected, you know? And I saw that another lifetime that I was playing out at this moment was where I was an Indigenous person living in this current community. So it was almost like a mirror of I was playing out both versions of myself at the same time.
Did you have an idea or see perhaps multiple Nicoles, like this multiverse, and there's lots of you in different universes experiencing different things?
Oh, yeah. And the way quantum physics explains is if you can imagine it, it's because it exists on another plane. I didn't go that far in that journey. I was more looking at other lifetimes. But I mean, I'm sure in my meditations, I go into parallel lives and I see all these different versions of me. But that was almost too much for one ceremony, if you know what I mean.
Did you get any hints of future lives?
Not in that journey, but I have had glimpses of future lifetimes. Yes. Yeah. Often when I do past life regressions, I end up in a between life or a future life, or just almost letting me know what I'm preparing for in other lifetimes. Yeah, I could just see how this is just one out of so many, you know? And my mind can only understand time. So even when I'm talking about how it's all happening at once, my mind is still going, oh, future life, past life, because that's how it's programmed to comprehend.
So is there a feeling, if you look at it, oh, this is just one of many, don't take it so seriously?
Yeah, absolutely. Like often when we come here, we want to experience it all. And especially as a woman living in North America, I want it all, right? And I have to remember, it's like, I don't have to do it all in this lifetime. And I have to get out of the thought that it has to happen all at once and at the same time. And that I can savor different lifetimes for different things. And whenever I've kind of zoomed out and tried to understand what this life for me is currently, it really describes that I came here to understand my spirituality and to give myself permission to go deep into it. So understanding that feels like I get off the hook of trying to accomplish so much in this one life.
So change the subject. There's a really interesting part in your book that's titled, Did He Meet Jesus? What happened there? And is there a lesson to be learned from what happened there?
Yeah. So this was a lovely reading that I got to do, where a young woman came to me for a reading and her mom was there. And usually I like to do one-on-ones because I find it's kind of awkward. It's like, do you go to therapy and invite your parents? You know what I mean? So it's almost like, you know, people edit themselves when there's other people watching. So I always ask for people to come by themselves. But anyways, this time the woman showed up at the door and she had her mom with her. And I thought, oh, well, I'm not going to tell her mom to wait outside. That's rude. So I invited them both in. But I noticed for mom, I felt like I had to be on my best behavior with her. Like I had to really watch my language. I had to sit up straight. It just felt like she was really watching me. And I decided to do a reading for both of them at the same time and just to see who came through in spirit. And the first spirit that came through was her grandmother. And she talked about this religious cross. And she just so happened to be wearing it around her neck, which was great evidence to show that I picked up on that. And then we moved over to the young woman. And it was clear that her partner or her boyfriend or fiance, I'm not sure which one it was. I think it was a fiance. He had died and he was coming through to communicate and just let her know that he was with her. And it was very clear when I was connecting with him, like he was an atheist, he wasn't religious, he didn't really believe anything, but he was very much at peace in the afterlife and he was with his ancestors. And at the end of the reading, I remember asking both of them, I'm like, do you have any questions or is there anything you wanted to ask me for before I bring this reading to a close? And she looked at me and she just said, yeah, I want to know if he met Jesus. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, Jesus didn't show up during the reading. He had no connection to Christ or anything like that. It was not who he was. I remember thinking in the moment, like, how am I going to answer this question? Because she's very religious and she was thinking, like, unless he met Jesus, he must be in hell, you know? So I remember explaining to her that, no, I didn't feel that he was with Jesus. And then she was very concerned if he was okay. And I just said, well, of course, like he's communicating. Of course he's okay. And he's happier than ever. And she was worried about him not being connected to Jesus because her grandmother being religious and coming through and explaining the cross, she was with Jesus. And so I just explained to her that based on his life and his journey and his experience, he brought that with him to the afterlife and that Jesus was just in another department and it didn't make him any better, any less. It's just a different vibrational field and he was perfectly content where he was and that Jesus was there, but he didn't have a relationship with him. So there was no need for him to be in his reading or to be in his afterlife experience. And I believe she got that and she understood, but it definitely kind of rocked her boat a little bit, if you know what I mean, because she wanted to know if
Jesus was there, it had to be better, right? And just like I was talking about earlier about how in the afterlife, there's different vibrational frequencies, doesn't make one better than the other. It's just an experience. And people go into their afterlife and find contentment and can find peace because that is their experience.
What do people do on the other side?
Oh my gosh, I've heard so many things from spirits. They tell me so many different things. So it's not cut dry. I find that parents who were taken young and they had children on the earth, their vital role is to take care of their loved ones in spirit. Like they are just there to take care of their loved ones who are still here on earth. And they're also very much usually with family on the other side. And some just go off and experience, and it's like they're traveling through the astral plane. Others become guides. Others go to, you know, school and look like they're continuing to evolve their spirit on the other side. They very much go to a place where they feel comfortable and they continue to evolve themselves from there. And when people die from really traumatic experiences like suicide or addiction, usually they go into a place I call the holdings place, where it's like they just rest and it's like they're in a cocoon for a while and they can just be with guides and angels around them just to help them until they're ready to continue to evolve. And so I've experienced so many different things that spirits have told me, and it's never the same thing. And it's just like, if you think about who they were when they were human, almost mirror that in the afterlife, and there's a good chance they'll continue to be doing that on the other side. And those that have really difficult lives and maybe didn't figure it out or didn't grow, they usually on the other side are learning a lot on the other side.
And I suppose you do that for a while, and it's weird saying for a while if time doesn't exist, but then you start to think, well, I'm more than this, and they move on from that.
Yeah, I mean, we're always expanding, right? So, you know, sometimes you choose to come back to Earth. Yeah, sometimes you move into being a guide for a while, or you continue to evolve and grow on the other side. So it's hard for us to comprehend if it's timelessness. But yeah, it's always changing and evolving.
Ever expanding.
Yeah, we never stagnate.
You also talk in the book about one of your passions being going beyond the evidential mediumship, and you're looking into other things.
Yeah, higher consciousness. And so this is how it happened, is that I remember working with one of my mediumship teachers, and he explained, it's like, you know, after a period of time where you understand evidence and bringing through messages from loved ones in spirit, and being able to bring connection to let them know who's there, it's almost like you want to go further. So just like how spirit's always evolving, we're always evolving too. And I started to connect with higher consciousness readings. So it's like after I bring through the evidence so we know who we're with, it's almost like, let's go higher. Where are they now? What are you doing? Like, what's evolving? And that's how I started to understand about where the spirit is at right now. Because they're not exactly who they were when they were on Earth. They've dropped the human suit. And yes, their personality survives death, but they continue to grow. So they're not stuck in that character of who they once were when they were on Earth.
I think you talked to somebody that was in spirit form, and he said he was really interested in the Earth experiment.
Yeah. So that was a reading I did. And when he was alive, he was fascinated about the afterlife. Like, he was always studying metaphysics. He was always trying to understand what happens after we die. And when he got to the spirit world, he then realized, oh, okay, well, I've spent my whole life trying to understand the afterlife. And now that I'm here, I'm fascinated by the Earth experiment. I'm coming to Earth. And it's funny, he told me that I would be too. When I was back there, that I was going to be so fascinated about Earth. And just the experience that we have here.
It's been great talking to you again. The book's called The Light, The Dark, A Journey to Wholeness. And can you tell us, where can we get it?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon around the world.
And I have a, it's the sequel to my first book, The Power, Occult Mediumship. So if you haven't read that one, I would recommend that one first. Or if, unless you want to just jump into this one and skip my story. But yeah, it's on Amazon. And for anyone local here on Vancouver Island in Canada, you can get it at the bookstores here as well.
Can you give us your website? Can people book stuff with you?
Yes, my website is www.NicolePowell.ca. And on there, I have an email list you can subscribe to where I share about my events, either in person or around the world online. And I do have a wait list for readings in 2026.
Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon. It's been wonderful having this conversation.
This week, I was talking to Nicole Powell about her book, The Light, the Dark, A Journey to Wholeness. If you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you can sign up to Patreon. When you sign up for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get an extended episode every month. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. My book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.